There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. GameTime is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their GameTime guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the GameTime app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. GameTime.
Hello everyone, Andy here, and here's what you can look forward to in today's episode.
In today's episode, I was joined by Atlanta Falcons UK's Danny Folks as we review week 8 of the 2025 NFL season. I discuss which team I think are pretenders.
I'm going to be a bit of a burst in the bubble kind of man here. I think they're pretenders.
Danny predicts his Super Bowl winner.
Well, I'll give you my thoughts on the game. But as part of this discussion, I can also give you my Super Bowl winner prediction, and that is...
As we discuss the biggest talking points, hope you all enjoy.
I think the dynasty is over. I know they've rallied.
Do not say that. That's the famous last words. Do not ever... No one should say that.
It is.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Across the Pod NFL podcast. I am, as ever, your host, Andy Davis, here to review Week 8 of the 2025 NFL season. As you can see, for those who are watching on YouTube, you can see my guest back with us today. A returning guest is Falcons fan Danny Folks. Danny, how are you, first of all? How are things?
Firstly, thank you very much for having me on. Secondly, I wish I wasn't following the weekend, but here we are nonetheless. I'm sure you're going to love the content that's going to come from this. So, yeah, can't wait to get started.
Well, I caught a little glimpse of it on your of the Falcons UK social media. I got a little glimpse into what's to come on this episode. And yeah, we were talking off camera about how our teams in both sports we love so much play each other back-to-back weeks. You had Liverpool playing Man United the weekend before last. And then last weekend you had Falcons take on the Dolphins. And I was fearing it was going to be, two out of two for you. But thankfully, we'll go on to in a minute. But the Dolphins did beat the Falcons by 34 points to 10. But before we do that, the Chargers did beat the Vikings on Thursday Night Football by 37 to 10. In terms of that game, I want to quickly touch on the Chargers. I mean, the Vikings, these two teams seem to find ways to win and lose games, but the Chargers, for me, just showed the difference right now, and particularly at the quarterback position. I felt like, you know, Carson Wentz had his struggles, and you could see him, you know, visibly upset on the sidelines. It was a real telling moment. I mean, can't think who the announcer was on Thursday was saying that it is only one game, and they are right. It is only one game, but it looked really bad. It looked really bad from Carson Wentz and his Vikings team. We've seen it in London, for example, still got the win, but he wasn't great in London.
Yeah.
And we've seen what's happened since. But Herbert, on the other hand, you know, did get an interception, but had three touchdowns in this game. And I felt like overall, I was just seeing sort of the levels between Carson Wentz, you know, not the quarterback he once was, and yeah, Justin Herbert, who is me having maybe his best, if not one of his best seasons as a pro, really showed the difference in, you know, why one team's gone 5-3 and one team's now 3-4.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because on paper, the Vikings are, in my opinion anyway, still look pretty solid. Like you'd expect them to be, outperforming what they're currently doing. But I think the Chargers have been contenders for the last couple of years now, and that progress is, you're kind of seeing it. They're still a long shot, I think, but did they get 419 yards overall? And you can't win games like that. Like, you can't beat teams that are performing to that level. So I'm not that shocked, really. And the Vikings quarterback situation probably doesn't help them in terms of, like you said, Wentz, and then the rotation around that and who they have. And it's probably not a great season to be a Vikings fan, because they would have had ambitions for a playoff run, I'd assume. And they're clutching at straws at this early part of the season, I think.
Yeah, and we mentioned Carson Wentz. He has actually in the last day or two been announced to be out for the season. He's going to undergo a season-ending shoulder surgery. I mean, they've got the Lions and then the Ravens and then the Bears, but the Lions next. I mean, right now, they're unsure whether McCarthy will be cleared to start, which means that Max Brosmer will be making his first NFL start, I believe his NFL appearance as well. I mean, if there's any sort of example of baptism of fire, it's going against this Detroit team, who for me are maybe the best team in the NFC, maybe even the NFL on their day. To put him up against this Lions team, who you know, are in good form right now. If you take away the Chiefs game, yeah, that's not a good situation for him.
it's not, but at the same time, and this is just for the balance, the expectations of him won't be sky high. So if he went and just had a tidy game, nobody's going to go out and thinking they're going to win that game. So all he's got to do is perform at like a pretty steady level. If he's hitting that kind of 60 to 65% accuracy and doesn't drop any clangers in terms of throwing loads of interceptions and stuff, then as a Vikings fan, you've probably got to take that one on the chin, really. But I agree in terms of the Lions. I think power rankings change week on week, but if you look at them, they're probably still one of the favourites for the Super Bowl, if not the favourite, although we'll get to my favourite later in the show, I'd imagine. So it'll be an uphill battle, but I don't think you can be disappointed as a Vikings fan if you don't win that game, because the odds are against you very much.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing who your Super Bowl favourite is. I'm really intrigued because I have no idea who it's going to be. So I'm intrigued to know. I've got mine in my head. You know, my Super Bowl matchup right now is probably, I think it's the Lions, and I think it's one of the, you know, Bills or Chiefs. I think that will be the AFC Championship game. I think it all depends on who's home in that game. But moving on, let's get into it. Let's get into our two teams meeting up as the Dolphins, who were 1-6, took on the 3-3 Atlanta Falcons, and against somewhat the odds, the Dolphins end up winning by 34 points to 10. I mean, looking at the stat line, of course, the main headline before the game, which probably had a massive impact on the result, was the fact that Michael Penix was out of the game. Kirk Cousins stepped in. He had 173 yards, 0 touchdowns, 0 picks, but he did have 21 out of 31 completions, whereas Tua Tagovailoa had his best game of his season by far, and maybe one of the best games of his career, as he threw for 205 yards, had just 6 incomplete passes, and had 4 touchdowns with 0 interceptions. You saw the leading rusher for the Falcons being Bijan Robinson with 25 yards, whereas the Dolphins' leader was Devon Achane, who had 67. And then the leading receiver for the Falcons was Carell Hodge, with 31 yards, where Waddle had 99. So I think there you see a bit of a difference in the performances. But I'll let you go first as a Falcon fan. I mean, I had to watch this game via Red Zone, whereas you probably watched it on Game Pass in full. What was your take on that performance? Because for me personally, I was saying in the preview, you know, I don't see a way we win this game. Obviously, this was before, you know, it was confirmed that Cousins was...
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Playing, but I just felt that the way we were playing, the kind of how poor it's been in that Browns game especially, was a real damning indictment of how it's been. I just felt the confidence was at an all-time low. I just didn't think we'd come out and be so good in this game.
Yeah, I think you were very, very good, but we also made you look better than you were. It's a bit of a weird one because I think you're on the back of 3 losses before coming into us, which is a nightmare for the Falcons because, historically speaking, we love a trap game. So we beat the teams where the odds are stacked against us. And in the same way that we stuttered against the Panthers earlier in the season when they beat us 30-0, it felt like that game again. I did think we'd win. I just didn't think it'd be a pretty game. But there are fundamental issues with the Falcons coaching at the moment in time. And this is one that we've been discussing all season long. A handful of weeks ago, the Falcons got rid of the wide receiving coach, which was the most scapegoat removal that I've seen in a long time. And ultimately, Zach Robinson, the offensive coordinator, is at fault for the majority of these things. Without going in too deep, his playbook is so shallow. Like it gives like high school football, not even college football. And I think that's where a lot of the issues rise, because Penix was out, which is a huge loss. Cousins came in, which is fine, because by all accounts, Penix going to Cousins is not really a step down as such. Cousins is a vet and he's been around the league for a very long time. He knows the ball. Obviously, he was our starter last season. But the age is showing. And instead of playing to that by just handing the ball off to Robinson and Tyler Allgeier all the time, they were trying to make him play some exotic throwing plays. And he's just not got it in the tank anymore, unfortunately. I think it was a rough watch. But on the back of that, so many Falcons fans have lost faith in the coaching regime. Morris is very much our kind of guy, like very team orientated, and talks up his players and doesn't really have those confrontations on the sideline and things like that. But following the loss against yourselves, he said, and I quote, "The Dolphins out Atlanta'd us." And none of us know what that means. And it's the second time this season that he's made a comment like that. And I just can't wrap my head around why he's coming out with catchphrases and slogans that sound like they should be on T-shirts after a loss of that magnitude. It was rough, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to rub salt in the wound, but for me, the definition of Atlanta is probably losing games when you're not meant to. I kind of view them and the Chargers are the kings of bottle in the NFL for me. You think about the Chargers seem to always find ways to lose games and have, I think the start goes back to 2010 when they had the number one offense, number one defense, didn't make the playoffs. And of course, the Atlanta 28-3 is the sort of the thing that most people associate with the Falcons more than maybe the highlight plays of, Tony Gonzalez, of, Matt Ryan, there's so many good plays in Falcons history, but all everyone thinks about is probably that, and also their star guy being put in prison for fighting. Yeah. That's the two things I think of with the Falcons, is how good Vic was and how much that sort of disrupted your team, him doing what he did, and then the Patriots lost. So kind of if that's kind of what I think of Atlanta, as that, and Atlanta means you bottled the lead. So I don't know what he means by
exactly.
I don't know what the word Atlanta means, because Atlanta means, obviously there's. I don't know what it means. I don't know what that's meant to be. I have no idea. That's me. I've not even heard that quote. That for me is. I think that's crazy. I don't know what to think of that.
That wasn't even the worst bit. So, the press conference in my head after a loss like that, of that magnitude, against, respectfully, a team of your quality in the position that you were in at that time, with three losses on the bounce, when you lose that game, it's a kick in the teeth, but you have to suck it up. And he should have come out firing and said, "That's not good enough. We cannot do that again. We will not do that again." And I think he should have probably made some coaching changes, but that's not Atlanta's way typically. We never do them mid-season, or not large changes anyway, in terms of your OC and your DC and everything. But on top of that, he also said, it's not the fans' job to like us. It's our job to make them like us, which you could interpret in a nice way, but it really antagonized me. I was like, we spend money, especially the fans over in Atlanta, but we spend money to come and watch you at this ground, like, we do like you, we want to like you, but you're making it difficult for us to love this franchise in turn, which is why the Benz is usually only half full, because there's not a lot of love for this franchise in the city at the moment in time, or in the state actually. But it's a strange one. I think we're at a point where we hired Morris, we weren't over the moon about it by in any stretch of the imagination. People like Ben Johnson were knocking about and stuff like that. But we sucked it up because we thought Morris is a good man. He'll rally the troops sort of thing. And we've seen glimpses of that. But he's never had a winning season. No, correct myself. He's had one winning season as a head coach, I think. But he's speaking like he's seasoned and he's been there and he's done it and he's had playoff runs. And I think the Falcons need a bit of a cultural reset because, like you said, what every other team around the league associates us with is 28-3 to start with, but then just bottling leads in general. But we didn't even get to a lead against your guys. So I suppose it's a different narrative entirely.
I mean, I've said it before that I think the Falcons are, you know, I don't bet. I'm not a betting man, but I imagine if I was a betting man, they'd be the hardest team to bet on because you think about just this season alone, you think about the fact that you get shut out by the Panthers who, you know, aren't exactly a great team. No. Then fast forward to week six and you beat the Bills who I had as a team that would not going to lose a single game at home, team that was going to win the AFC just a few weeks ago. And then you go out and play like that against, well, one of the worst teams this season in us. And I think, yeah, it's such a hard team. And, you know, the players are there. I mean, the running back room, I love the running back room. I think Algier is so underrated. Robertson, of course, is now one of the best running backs in the league. You know, London, you know, there's good players in this team. And it's just a shame that, you know, they seem to find ways to constantly, you know, lose games. I think this is why, in a way, we talked off camera about how, you know, about draft position and all that with the Dolphins. But in a way, there's a reason why these teams keep having first overall picks and keep having high picks is because it's not necessarily where you are in the draft order. Sometimes it's more to do with who you actually draft.
Yeah.
I think obviously top three picks is sort of like, you know, you're given, you know, you're going to get 8 times out of 10 a good player. But then, you know, that sort of fourth or fifth pick onwards, it is basically how you draft them and sort of when you get the player in, how you coach them and all that. So, yeah, for me, it's a team that I just feel personally this team, I don't know how you change it.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Is there some sort of dead bodies underneath the stadium? Is there some sort of curse on the Falcons? I don't know how. It is literally like, it's just, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I was very happy, don't get me wrong, but I was thinking, this Falcons team has a chance, you know, obviously the NFC South is probably out of reach, but certainly, you know, making the playoffs, there's definitely a chance to make it as a wild card team. And you're finding your ways to, you know, to not win games. And it's a shame because it's a good franchise. But at the same time, I've got to praise my team at some point. I've not done it much this year, praise this team, pretty much since the season preview. I was really happy with, first of all, just how we kept on to the lead because we've seen the Chargers game, 40 seconds up, you go ahead, you lose the game. You think about the Panthers game, you were 17-0 up in the second quarter, which you were in this game as well. So I was really happy to see the team actually finish the game off. You know, we had narrow losses to the Bills and the Patriots and the Chargers. But for me, it was just really good to see us actually win a game comfortably because even the game we won before against the Jets, it wasn't a comfortable win. The Jets should have won that game, arguably. But I love what I saw from Waddle, from the touchdown, the 40-yard touchdown he had in the game, which turned it from 17-3 to 24-3. And I think that, in a way, helped seal the game. I can't complain. I can't complain. We've got the Ravens next on Thursday night. We'll get onto that more in our preview of Week 9. But, you know, with, you know, how the Ravens are getting potentially Lamar Jackson back, and I think there's, you know, he's going to be playing, I think, but whether he'll be fully healthy, I don't know. Probably a perfect game for him to come in and get back right again. But that gives me hope that we could potentially cause a shock to the Ravens. Now, I thought we could cause them a shock because we have done in the past, beaten a couple of times in the last few years. So I have faith we can beat them. And I'm happy with how he performed. I mean, it was good to see Tua actually have a good game, because he's not had any good game, I don't think, this season, really. Even in the win against the Jets, he wasn't that great. So for me, you know, good to see him get a good performance. Good to see Ollie Gordon get involved. And he had 46 yards on the ground, 20 yards, you know, receiving, a touchdown as well, reception. Yeah. It was good. He had a lot of great sort of third down sort of conversions. That's been kind of the theme of the season. He's been used a lot as a third down back. Yeah, I was really happy with the overall performance. Malik Washington had a great touchdown. And I thought overall, yeah, I was happy with the performance. But I'm not going to sit here and think that's going to be the one that's going to change our fortunes around. You know, we've got the Bills and the Ravens within the next few weeks. And we've got the Commanders in Madrid before that week 12 bye. So, yeah, by all means, it's not a win that's going to turn our season around. But as a fan, you want to see your team win games. I know some people like to have the tank and like to see the team lose, maybe get a better draft pick. But I think to see the team win is always good. So for me, I was pretty happy with that.
I agree. I was overly critical of the Falcons and didn't give your team much credit, but Tua had one of the best performances that I've seen him have. Whether that's our fault or in his benefit, but I believe he's had some issues with his eye and he had a visor and everything like that as well. So there's a lot of factors that were saying that he shouldn't have performed as well as he did. And he did. And he just kept me flowing. So if he can remain anywhere near that level over the next handful of weeks, then you've got a chance, if not more.
Yeah, pretty good considering he can't see above his offensive lineman.
Yeah.
It's good that he performed well, because that comment for me, I don't think I've touched on that comment actually since he said it. I mean, that for me is crazy. I mean, there's one thing saying Josh Allen has way more ability than I do. That's one thing, saying that your division rival, the quarterback, has given you so much torment over the years, admitting he's better than you. That's one thing. But to say that, you know, you can't see above your lineman, that for me is pretty damning. I mean, we all thought at the time when he got drafted, is he short? And certainly when he first struggled, we were like, well, is his size an issue? But then Tyreek Hill comes in and bails him out a lot of time with some throws he made. But yeah, for me, that for me is, yeah, crazy. But then at the same time, the fact he's got four touchdowns whilst not seeing his lineman, yeah, fair play to him.
Yeah.
Moving on, though, to the games that caught our eye in week 8. So we both picked the game each that we think caught our eye the most during Sunday slate. Danny, as you're the guest, I'll let you go first. Which game for you stood out most?
I hope it's not the same as yours. And I'm doing this with the Falcons in the back of my mind, but I'm going for the Colts v. the Titans. What happened at the Titans during the offseason, the Colts during the offseason, I do not know, and I cannot wrap my head around how well they're performing this season. They, of course, beat the Titans 38-14, stunning. But that game individually isn't the thing. It's just their entire season so far. They've been ridiculous. Jonathan Taylor, it's not very often that a quarterback doesn't get the MVP award, but Jonathan Taylor is some player. I think I read that he's had 4 3-plus touchdown games already. Fact check me if I'm wrong, but I think that's correct, which is ridiculous for this point of the season, because I know there is more to being a running back than just your touchdowns, but when you've got that kind of output, it's impossible to debate. Everyone had kind of shut Daniel Jones down a little bit in terms of, yeah, he's solid, he's okay, he's fine, and that was about his level. But he's looking like he's going to get a bumper contract now. And to be honest, if I was him, if he can carry the Colts to the playoffs and potentially beyond, I'd be looking for a payout that's in line with some of the top earners at the moment. But it's just, even people like Michael Pittman and things like that, everybody just seems to have clicked at the same time. And I can't criticize it. I just think they really are the team to watch, because everybody's going to them thinking they're going to slip up sooner or later. Like, they are not that good of a team on paper, and it's just not happening. And this 7-1 now, I think, is how I would have barely had them on for 7 wins all season at the start of the season. So I think they're my one to watch at the moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, 7-1. I mean, I think they made us all look silly. You know, we did our season predictions episode. I brought guests on, Luke and Steve. I had them finishing bottom of the AFC South. I didn't think they'd go. I thought the Titans would be third. I thought the Colts would be fourth. And Steve and Luke also had the Colts third. But I'm going to... Apologies to Colts fans here. I'm going to be a bit of a burst in the bubble kind of man here. I think they're pretenders. I do think, of course, 7-1, granted, you know, it's an amazing start to the season. But I want to touch everyone on who they played. The Dolphins of week one, who we've just been saying have been poor this year. Okay, the Broncos week two, fair enough, that's a good win there. But the Titans twice.
Yeah.
The Cardinals and the Raiders, they've beaten. I mean, they've beaten the Chargers. Bear in mind, with two main offensive linemen injured, and they lost to the Rams, but albeit they ran them close. I just think that for me, this is the 2024 Minnesota Vikings for me. Not even just Daniel Jones, but just this team in general. I mean, the Vikings team last year had three losses all year, and you know, everyone thought, oh my god, this is amazing. But then what happened down the stretch? They lost their last game, lost in the playoffs, and you know. I can't think right now they have been good, but they've not had, I don't think, many tough tests. I think it's really been the Chargers and the Rams and the Broncos out of those seven games. They got the Steelers and your guys in the next two games. Okay, yeah. Fair enough. The death or teams out in that middle range. But, you know, I think for me, the schedule does help them a lot. I mean, they've got the Texans twice who can't seem to protect Stroud at all. They've got the Jags who've been very hit and miss. So I think we'll see the real Colts later on in the season. I'm certainly not going to, even though they are, since they probably have been the best team so far this year in the NFL with results and how they perform, but I want to see them against the Bills. I want to see them against, you know, whoever they play in the playoffs. I mean, right now they'll projected to be the playoff bye, and then they'll probably play most likely the Bills or the Chiefs.
Yeah.
That for me, I can see that. If they are going to win the AFC South and they are going to get number one seed, I think that will be personally, I think, where they'll falter. I just think right now, Daniel Jones has won a playoff game. I want to put that out there. He has won a playoff game. He beat the Vikings, coincidentally. So he has got form of beating teams in playoffs. And you know, I did call him back then maybe Eli Manning 2.0 when he's at the Giants for that reason.
Yeah.
But I just think right now, are we getting too ahead of ourselves? Are we getting a little bit carried away with maybe them beating some not so good teams? A bit like the Dolphins in 2023. We were beating some really bad teams, but then we came up against good teams, albeit we weren't 7-1. But I just feel maybe hold the horses, no pun intended, a little bit until we've seen them play. I think that Chiefs game for me is the biggest test because the Chiefs, I'm big on the Chiefs. I think they've been really good this year. They got better as the season went on. I think for me, if they can go out and beat the Chiefs, I don't know whether they're home or away. If it's in Arrowhead, or even if it's in Indy, they're playing. Yeah, it's in Arrowhead. If they can go to Arrowhead in Week 12, which is the point of the year where the Chiefs normally turn it on, if they can go to Arrowhead and get a win, or even run them close like the Rams game, I think then I'll start to think, okay, this team is actually legit. But I think until they beat a good team, especially on the road, I can't really personally praise them too much. I can praise them for the Taylor's performances. I can praise the defense, but I think for me personally, I don't think I'd call them contenders yet until they go out and beat the Chiefs or someone of that ilk.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because you can only beat the teams that are in front of you, and they've done a very, very good job of that so far. Of course, it's based on the division, but on paper, if they got another four wins from the remaining nine games, whatever they've got left, they're in the playoffs anyway. So they don't even have to beat all of those direct rivals to put themselves in a position that would have been well beyond what they would have expected to be in the season. Kind of gives me the feel of Washington last year. I had them on to do all right, tidy, and they massively overachieved, in my opinion. And that's kind of showing this year that they've gone back to probably where they should be in that trajectory, but they had a bit of a spark of a season where they overperformed. I don't think Colts fans would be disappointed they would be disappointed, but I don't think they'd be too heartbroken if they got knocked out early in the playoffs, because that's progress, like that's solid progress in a hard division. But I know what you mean. It's hard. The Chiefs will be a good matchup. I'm not as high on the Chiefs as you sound like you are. I think the dynasty is over. I know they've rallied.
Do not say that. That's the famous last words. Do not ever say that. No one should say that about the Chiefs.
It is. I think, yes, they've rallied in the last 3 or 4 weeks and they've got back to winning ways and everything. But I think they've lost the fear factor a little bit. And I know historically speaking, over the last 5 or 6 years, the Chiefs have only like dragged themselves through the first 10 games. And then around week 10 to week 12, they really show up. So by the time the playoffs come, they're in like peak form when everyone else is exhausted and tired. But I just think they've got an aging roster. They've struggled with injuries. And yes, they've got people coming back now. I just think that they've not quite got that, like, I hate the word, but that aura around them where teams face them and think, we can't win this. I think teams can see ways to do that now. And I'm not saying they're not going to go to the playoffs. They'll probably go to the playoffs. It's the Chiefs. But I just don't think that they've got the same in the tank as teams like the Bills and the Lions and my Super Bowl contender, which I'll still keep hold of for a little bit longer. So that'll be a good matchup. If they get beat by them, the Colts, it would be a kick in the teeth. But if they win 4 out of 9 games, they're probably in the playoffs anyway. So progress is progress.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether they can go far in the playoffs. But I think with the Chiefs, I think they're saving it up. You know, last year, they were one of only 4 teams to not score 30 points or more in a game in a regular season. Yeah. What happens if they go on and make the Super Bowl? And I do think there's a little bit of, black magic involved, you know, the playoffs and getting Taylor Swift to the Super Bowl, there's that as well.
Yeah.
I just think right now they've never, the Bills have yet to beat them in the playoffs. I think until they're beaten in the playoffs, I'm never going to write them off. And I think for me, I don't think it matters whether you aren't winning Super Bowls in week 7 or week 8, you're winning them in playoffs. I think as long as you get in, I think that's the most important thing. And I think for me, the Chiefs get there, especially, the Broncos have just lost Patrick Surtain for 4 to 6 weeks. The Chargers have their own inconsistencies. I think there's still a chance for them to win that division. I think even if they go in as a wildcard team, I think they can go up against anyone on their day in a playoff scenario and win. I do think it's destiny for the Bills to win the AFC, but I think certainly the Chiefs will be the next team to look out for. I think the Ravens are 2-5. They can still win that division, which is crazy. Burrow's going to come back healthy. Are they going to have enough wins on the board at that point to go out and make the playoffs? Probably not. And then who else have you got in the AFC? The NFC, for me, is way stronger right now. Probably is the Colts on paper with their record. But I think it's very scary to write off the Chiefs, personally. We all want a different winner. I mean, I said it before. I like it when new teams win, if it's not the Bills. But for me, I think never write them off. But I do think, in a way, I was talking about it in the group chat the other day about the perfect conference championship games. If you have Baker Mayfield against either Sam Darnold or Jared Goff, 3 quarterbacks there that have been written off, have great comeback stories. If you have, say, Daniel Jones against maybe a Trevor Lawrence or at a stretch, maybe a Tua Tagovailoa, if that is your AFC championship this season, I mean, that there is a perfect scenario. You had 2018, you had Blake Bortles, Case Keenum, Tom Brady, and Nick Foles. If you can have a quarterback quartet again, these quarterback championships, that isn't Jalen Hurts, that isn't Mahomes, that isn't Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, but it is these quarterbacks that have been written off on the bench for parts of their career. That, for me, is the perfect one if it's not your team involved. And I would love it to be a Daniel Jones against Baker Mayfield. That would be an incredible matchup just for the story and how much they've both written off sort of critics and how they, or even Sam Darnold, they can just go both. That could be an advertisement itself. If it's Seahawks and Sam Darnold against Daniel Jones and the Colts, that is the biggest advertisement for do not go to the Giants or Jets. Do not play in New York if you're an NFL player. Stay away if you're a quarterback. Crazy stuff. But fair play to the Colts. You can't write them off. 7-1. The game I want to touch on was Jets Bengals 39-38. I mean, this for me was caught my eye just for the kind of sheer nature of the game. Jets getting their first win. The Bengals had a real chance to get up in that division. I mean, we'll go on to later on, but the Steelers losing in Sunday Night Football. I mean, they had a chance to go, you know, level on wins with the Steelers, with wins and being, what, 4-4. And I think there was times where, you know, it looked really good for the Bengals. I mean, at one point they were, if I'm getting it right, the scoreline at one point was 31-13 to the Bengals. And this was, you know, in the fourth quarter. I mean,
It was, I think by the time the fourth quarter started, it was still only 31-16. So that really is a collapse by every explanation of the word.
It is, because you think about the AFC North isn't, I think it's been one of the weakest divisions this year in terms of no one's really played that well. Yeah. You think about, in fact, that I said it before when they lost Burrow, if they can just keep afloat in that AFC North and they get Burrow back, start December or whenever he's back, they got a chance of winning the division or even going far in the playoffs. But that defense just keeps letting them down. I mean, they allowed 39 points to a team that's not won a game this year. They allowed Isaiah Davis to have, you know, 65 yards rushing, 44 yards receiving, 100 yards total, like 99 yards total. You know, Justin Fields had one of his best games of the season. This isn't like they've lost. Like last year, they lost games to the Ravens by these kind of score lines, and they lost big to good teams, and they, you know, almost made the playoffs. But to lose like this to a team, you know, that has been bad this year, I think it's really damning for them. It's really damning for the Bengals' chance to win that division. Of course, only one win behind the Steelers. There's a chance they can still win it. And Flacco, you know, did well. I mean, he had no interceptions in this game. He had 3 total touchdowns, 1 rushing. Yeah. And the time showed his feet. His footwork was still there with some plays. But, yeah, this is really damning on the Bengals for me. And I think that, in a way, this opens up the door for the Ravens. And I want to touch on them a little bit because they did get the win against the Bears. But you think about now, Lamar Jackson's back on Thursday night, potentially. They're only 2 wins behind the Steelers. And that's something I never would have thought when the Steelers were 4-2 and the Ravens were 1-4. I never would have said at that point, okay, they're going to have a chance of winning this division. But now, with the Bengals defense, the way it's playing and how poor it's playing, with the Ravens and the Browns being the Browns, how bad they've been, we all knew they'd be bad. And then the Steelers, you know, losing the last 2 games. There's a real chance there that despite Lamar Jackson, despite going 1-5, despite Lamar Jackson being out for almost a month, they got a chance of winning this division. I really do think this Ravens team shouldn't be written off at all.
It's the Ravens are a hard one for me because, again, for the last 3-4 years, maybe a little bit longer, they've probably been in that contender discussion. But the second they hit the playoffs, they forget how to play football. Lamar Jackson is absolutely pivotal in that. So them losing him for the handful of games was a catastrophe. And I think replacing him is very, very difficult because he's a very unique quarterback. Unique in terms of, yes, there are a lot of dual threat quarterbacks in the league, but how he does things individually, my argument would have been coming into this season that he's probably the most exciting quarterback. He gets me out of the chair more than anyone else. Like, you've got your Mahomes and people like that who are unbelievable, but individually, if you remove the team around them, I think Jackson is the man. So it's hard to write them off when he's in the mix, but it's that injury now, especially it was a hamstring, wasn't it? I think as the season drags on, you've got to watch those kinds of injuries because they can prick up again at any time. And if they were to lose him again, I think that limits the season. Nothing wrong with Huntley, might I add. Steady, serviceable, but not the same player by any stretch of the imagination.
No, but it makes you wonder why they didn't maybe go for him earlier, you know, in the season, because, you know, Cooper Rush hasn't done much. I feel like Cooper Rush is living off one game he played well for the Cowboys a couple of years ago. And I feel like he had this one game, I can't think what year it was for the Cowboys, where he came in to replace Dak. It might be when at some point he got injured, whether it's 2020 or whether it was 2024. Probably was 2020, to be fair. I remember he had this one game where he was electric, but ever since, I don't think I've seen him do much really since then. He's probably a great guy for locker room. That's probably why he's kept these jobs. But I kind of think Huntley looks so much better in a Ravens jersey, as he has done whenever he stepped in for Lamar Jackson in the past. So yeah, for me, I don't think the Ravens will make win anything. I think they'll, if they make the playoffs as division winners, I think the fifth seed will knock them out as the fourth seed. I don't think that right now it'd be probably one of the AFC West teams. I don't see them beating the Chargers, Chiefs, or Broncos. I don't think. I think they'll probably be one and done in the playoffs. But I think, yeah, for me, I think there's still a chance that they could win this division. But I want to touch on quickly one more thing on the Jets-Bengals game. First of all, what a touchdown reception from Mason Taylor. Yeah. But there was a point in the game where the Jets are coming down the field for what ended up being a game-winning drive, and they were got down to first and goal territory. Zach Taylor didn't call the timeout. And I was thinking, it was something like 2:37 left of the game. And I was thinking, well, they only got four tries anyway, and he got the timeout coming up. So you could have easily stopped it at 2:37 for three plays. And I think he kept the timeout for the end. But I kind of think at that point, just, I feel like if you get the timeouts in early in that moment, you know, get all three timeouts used, they could even have scored on the second touchdown, and therefore, you know, they've got, you know, so second play, second down, I should say, they had a timeout or two left. But the fact he left it down to 2-minute warning and still then didn't use timeouts again, it just means you're rushing a lot more your plays in that final drive. So it did end up being the first and goal and the first play of that final drive. But I'm kind of thinking, you know, it was 2:28 when they had the third and two. So you get to fourth down, sorry, you get to first down, first and goal, what's that, 2:25? You could easily time out there. You knock off probably about, I don't know, 3 or 4 seconds if you use all the timeouts, or just one timeout if they score. And you've got a lot of time there to try and get a touchdown. You can afford to, you know, run, you know, inbounds, and then, you know, snap the ball down and forfeit a down. But I just felt like it was just really poor clock management from Zach Taylor. It just meant they were rushing a lot more. They had, in the end, they had, I believe, something like 1 minute and 40. But if you had 2:37 or 2:20, that extra 40 seconds makes a huge difference to your final drive and how you win the game. And especially when they needed just a field goal. For me personally, that for me was surprising. I kind of feel at that point is, get the timeouts used up, or at least some of them, not just leave all of them till after the 2-minute warning. So for me, I was surprised by that. There's probably a logic, there's probably a reason why I'm not a coach and they are. There's probably a lot of behind that. But I was really stunned that they just didn't use at least one of the timeouts in that play sequence.
I think there's a lot of issues within the Bengals organization though, because there's those individual errors in terms of the clock management and the play calling and everything, but the structure of the roster is so bizarre, because of course they paid Joe Burrow's ridiculous money, which is right to do so, but instead of supporting him with a team and building around him, they just chucked the bag at Chase and they chucked the bag at two or three other players. So instead of trying to find some like roster friendly contracts to cater for an actual development of the team, I think they look too short-sighted. And then you've got the problem with Joe Burrow anyway, that every year in the NFL he's had an injury, pretty much. I think 2023 he may have not had an injury, but every other season since he's had one. I'm not saying get rid of Joe Burrow, I'm not crazy, but it's not sustainable. And yes, they've got Flacco, who's again serviceable, consistent, a nice veteran, but the most winningest teams don't change the quarterbacks throughout the season, whether that be for form or injury. And if Burrow is going to get injured every single season, what's the solution to that? Because that means your QB2's got to be just as good as him to be able to keep those consistency levels up. And I think that's a huge problem for them.
Absolutely. I think it's proved that, you know, you can't go out and get the best players and automatically win. You can go and buy Birch, you can buy Isaac, and that's just another example.
And it doesn't work.
Exactly, yeah. And then think about the Patriots dynasties over the years, you know, apart from the one near the end, Randy Moss, I mean, Edelman and Amendola weren't exactly the best receivers in the league, but they turned up when it mattered. They were great team guys and they won multiple Super Bowls together. You think about the Hannah situation with the offseason, and Burrow, he called for it, so you know he's kind of as responsible as the Bengals front office for this. But you think about You could have paid Chase. You could have easily spent that money on Higgins on somewhere else. You could have got a really serviceable second or third choice receiver.
Yeah.
For way less money. And you could have gone out and paid Hendrickson, or you could have done this or done that, or bought offensive linemen, or you could have traded for. There's all sorts you could have done.
Yeah.
Rather than just paying and being such a lopsided offense compared to defense. It's
massively. I think
there's proof in a lot of sports that you can't just put money at it and automatically win. So for me, I think there's a huge problem there with the Bengals. A team that hasn't paid players a lot of money in the past, now starting to do it. And I kind of think Higgins is good and he's a great WR2, but you could have got someone just as serviceable for less money personally. For me, I think we all want the Bengals to do well. Unless you're a Steelers, Ravens or Browns fan, I think we all want the Bengals. We all like Burrow. We all like this Bengals team. I think we all did during that Super Bowl run they had. I think we all started to love Burrow in that sense. But for me, it is one where I think personally, there's no coincidence that Lions' fortunes changed when they drafted Penei Sewell. Not Goff, because Goff went 3-13-1 in his first year. They got Penei Sewell next year. 8-9 games, almost make the playoffs. Next year, NFC Championship game, the following year, number one seed, probably should have made the Super Bowl. That's probably their year to do it.
Yeah.
But that's a coincidence that they got the guy, the lineman in, and, you know, what happened since they've been great. Yeah. And I think the lineman, for me personally, offensive lineman, is the most important position in football. I think as a unit as well,
yeah,
whether it's quarterback room, wide receiver room, secondary line, offensive line, defensive line. Offensive line for me is the most valuable unit in sport. If your offensive line is terrible, unless you're burrowing that one season, you aren't making the Super Bowl. Not many teams do that. If it hurts, the O-line he had, all those years Brady, O-line he had, great. Mahomes, good O-line. When they had a bad O-line, they got beaten by the Buccaneers heavily and beat by the Eagles heavily. You need a good O-line. That should have been where they went to. That plus some of the defense, I don't think you can win Super Bowls, even win playoff games by having, you know, that meme where it's, you know, the Ferrari in the not a nice house.
Yes, yeah, parked right outside.
Yeah.
Games are won in the trenches, ultimately. You can have a quarterback that is just middle of the pack, you're talking 16th, 17th in the rankings sort of level, but if you've got an O-line that can buy them time, any quarterback in the NFL that's a starting quarterback is more than capable of getting a playoff run if the team is built to support them. And Burrow just has not really got that luxury all of the time. But the same with the D-line as well, because if you're not pushing at the opponent's quarterback, if you're not getting those pressures, teams just take the time. And that's the biggest problem for them at the moment, I think. And it has been for the last couple of years, because they've not really worked on that anywhere near as much as they should have done, whether that be free agency or the draft or anything. I don't see how it's not been a priority for them.
I totally agree. Before we go into our final game we're going to talk about, I'm going to run through some of the scores on Sunday and Monday. So on Sunday, we saw the Ravens beat the Bears 30-16. We saw the Bills beat the Panthers 40-9. We saw the Texans beat the Niners by 26-15. We saw the Patriots beat the Browns 32-13. We saw the Eagles beat the Giants by 38-20, a game that saw Cam Scatterboo have his season come to an end. The Buccaneers beat the Saints 23-3. The Broncos beat the Cowboys 44-24. The Colts, as we mentioned, 38-14 win. Our Monday Night Football last night at time of recording, the Chiefs beat the Commanders by 28-7. But our final game was Sunday Night Football, as the Packers and Steelers faced off in what was deemed, of course, before the game as the quarterback battle, with Rodgers against his former team, Love against the guy that he replaced as the Packers' starting quarterback. And it was a win for the Packers, who moved to 5-1-1, where Steelers moved to 4-3, with a 35-25 win for the Packers. Looking at the stat line in this game, it was Jordan Love, who had 360 yards in total passing with 3 touchdowns, as well as a 2-point conversion. Rodgers had 2 touchdowns from 219 yards. As well as this, we saw Tucker Kraft have the game of his career, as he had 143 yards and 2 touchdowns. And we saw touchdowns for DK Metcalf and Wilson for the Steelers. And then for their defense, 3 sacks for the Packers in comparison to 0 for the Steelers. Now, Danny, your thoughts on the game?
Well, I'll give you my thoughts on the game, but as part of this discussion, I can also give you my Super Bowl winner prediction, and that is the Green Bay Packers. I am really, really high on the Packers, which hurts to say, because obviously coming from our side and everything, but whatever. Before the season, this was my prediction, so I am not just bandwagoning this. I don't even think they've got started yet. I don't think they're anywhere near their peak. And to be 5-1-1 is tidy. And bearing in mind the loss and the tie came back to back pretty much. So they had a little stutter. They've dug themselves out of it. They got Parsons on board, who's, I don't want to be rude, but he's not even performed that well yet, if at all. So when people like that get rolling, I think they are the team to watch. Jordan Love also tied a franchise record, I believe, for 20 straight completions, which is sensational because by all accounts, he's not a top quarterback. And by that, I mean your Mahomes and your Allens and people like that that can single-handedly carry a team. He's just an uber accurate and steady quarterback that's making that team look very, very good. Like, he probably ranks around 10th, give or take. That's just off the top of my head. So he's not right at the top of that pack, but he's so good to watch because I trust him. I know I'm a neutral, so it's much easier to trust someone that you don't have your joy riding on, but I just think he's so tidy. And you referred then in the stats to Tucker Kraft. That's a big man. And that was some performance. Like, he's a bulldozer of a player. And I think it's hard to overlook all those little pieces coming together. Of course, they're in a division with the Lions, which is a hard feat. But whether it be a wild card or winning that division outright, I think they're the ones. And especially against the Steelers side that were, they've been up and down, but they've been better than I thought they'd be. I did not think that Rodgers had much more in the tank, and apparently he does. He wasn't at his best at all, but it didn't matter. I think the Packers handled it as they should have. And yeah, I think that was probably my game of the week, just because it kind of reaffirmed them as my contenders for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think, you know, before the pass the trade, I think I was saying, you know, they haven't got that X factor, but I think since he's come in, he's made a huge difference in his defense, because I think not even just his own production, but also just the kind of way teams scheme against them now, they're the point where all their focus on Parsons, and therefore all their other players to step up and do the business. And, you know, Parsons, I agree with you totally. He's not been maybe standout player that we all maybe thought he'd be, but he's still, you know, sixth in the league for sacks, 6.5 in total. But I think there was a great kind of segment of the coverage which Chris Collinsworth and Mike Tirico were focusing on, the kind of stuff that he does and the impact he makes. And there was a lot of pressures on quarterbacks, a lot of, you know, the impact he's making. He's not getting the sacks on these plays, but he's putting the pressure on the quarterbacks. He's forced them to throw quickly and make mistakes. And it's just the disruption to those trenches, I think, is really clear to see. And I think,
yeah,
you know, people talk about the best trade of all time being Reggie Wayne for the Packers when they got him. And I don't think it's going to be of that impact, but I don't think it's far off. And I think certainly it's turned them from being a team that's been in and around the edges to being a contender. I do think, you know, you look at the NFC, I think it is one of the, for me, the Lions, Packers, I still think Eagles, and then Buccaneers for me. I don't see any way. And the Rams, I think the Rams are in that five as well. I think they're right up there. They've lost one game. They tied a game as well. Jordan Love at times frustrates me, but other times really, like, wows me as well. It's a weird kind of quarterback for me. But that game on Sunday, I thought he was really good. Made some really quick and efficient passes to avoid the sack. I thought there was some really good plays from him. He's quite faultless in this game. I think there was not much really wrong with his performance, I would say. And I think, yeah, they're a tough division, but if you can win that division with strength of the Lions and how the Bears are improving, I think it's a good test for the playoffs. I think, you know,
it is.
If you're, like, say, especially if you're that four seed in, like, a poor division, like the Texans or were last year, or this year, it could be the Steelers for that matter. You know, I don't think you've got the biggest test. If you're in one of the worst divisions, I don't know what the stat is in terms of how many teams have won the Super Bowl by one of the worst divisions. I think if you can go out and be the number one seed or number two seed and you're in that division, which I think is the best division in football, the NFC North,
yeah,
if you can go out and win that division, I think you're a good team. And I think that's a really big test for you that you've already had, that you've already accomplished, you've already completed by winning that division. So I think, yeah, the Packers are, you know, in a good place right now. There's a lot of things to do with the age he is. When Rodgers won his first Super Bowl, they were the same age. I think Bart Starr was the same age when he won a Super Bowl. I think 27's got a lot of, you know, meaning for Packers fans and this Packers organization. So I think, you know, this could be a year where they, you know, where they do it. I think for me, I still have it being the Lions against the Bills or Chiefs. But for you, Danny, who would you have them? Because we're getting to that time of the year now where people are asked on the show who they think is going to win the Super Bowl, who they're going to beat in the Super Bowl. If you mentioned the Packers going to win the NFC, who do you think wins the AFC and who do you think they'll play in the
AFC? I'm a little bit torn because my heart and head say the Bills, because I just think that they've been so close for like two or three seasons now. And all of the pieces are coming together. And yes, they lost against the Falcons, which is just a ridiculous, like, slip up by them. But I don't think it changes the quality of the team. The only thing, I'm not concerned by the Colts, because like I said, even though I'm high on them, I don't think they've got the facilities to go that far. I don't think anyone in the AFC South has got the facilities, so I don't think that's a concern. The Chiefs, you can never write them off. The only other one that's just lingering in the back of my mind, and this is ridiculous because they're too early in the development, is the Patriots.
Yeah.
Just because nobody's talking about them, really. Or if so, I'm in my own echo chamber where nobody's discussing them. They're 6-2. Like, Drake May looks like Brady reincarnated. I'm not saying they're going to do it, but there's just something to, like, in the back of my mind saying there's still a shot there. I'm going to say the Bills, but I would not overlook the Patriots getting far. That's my only little thing. But that would, of course, require a wild card spot for the division because only one of those two is going through. So,
yeah, I'm going to be, again, the party pooper here. It's the same thing as the Colts. The teams are playing. Raiders, yeah. Dolphins, Steelers, Panthers, Bills, Saints and Titans and Browns. Now, fair enough, the Bills win was great. I know made them throw a touchdown, but great performance from him and the team. And, you know, he's only had 3 picks and he's had 15 touchdowns. And he's been, I think for me, he's an MVP contender. I do think he's been really good this year, but I've got to think about who he's playing now. This is kind of the benefit of having the easier schedule as a result of being one of the worst teams the year before, is that you do get an easier schedule and they've got, you know, they've got the Buccaneers coming up, they've got the Bills and the Ravens, but they've got the Jets twice. They've got the Falcons, who, as you know pretty well, are a hard team to predict each week. The Giants without Scatterbue now. You've got the Bengals, whose defense seems to allow, you know, point after points. The Ravens team, who are 2-5 for a reason, even with Lamar Jackson back in a couple of weeks. And then the Dolphins, who we said before have been pretty bad this year. So I think, again, they're going to be either fifth seed or... I don't see him being anything lower than 15. I think they'll either win the division or they'll go through the wildcard team. I still think, as good as he's been, he's not had much of a test apart from the Bills game. I know they won it, fair enough, but I think winning in week 5 is a whole different thing to winning a playoff game in week 19, week 20, whatever it's going to be.
Yeah.
So I kind of think, again, you know, Patriots and Colts are two teams for me that are just right now being good, but I kind of think I've not seen really tested yet.
Yes,
that for me is my biggest takeaway from the Patriots. I think Drake May has been this season a top 5 quarterback. I think he's in the MVP race. But no, for me, I still think you put him up against a game in Arrowhead or a game in Buffalo or let's say, for example, I can see him making maybe even the conference championship game, but I still think you put him up on the road, especially against the Bills or Patriots or, you know, even a fully firing Lamar Jackson and Ravens, that place is the hard place to go in Baltimore, especially if it's a night game. I still think I would still have my doubts. But obviously, I'm hoping I'm proved right because I don't want to see the Patriots win again. But I don't think many NFL fans don't want them to win games again and win Super Bowls again. And I don't think they're...
Yeah.
But I don't know whether you saw, actually, there's a the whole thing about NFL being scripted and the whole thing about the Super Bowl logo indicating, you know, who wins it. But there's a picture of the NFL put up of all the, well, one player from each team looking at San Fran. The two players, the players nearest the stadiums are Drake May and Baker Mayfield. It makes you think, as the Tizier once said, it makes you wonder, if that happens, if the Buccaneers and Patriots make the Super Bowl, I think there's every reason to believe it is scripted, especially after all this FBI stuff and all this. It would not. I think that if that happened, if it was Patriots Buccaneers, that for me would be a real. I think, considering as a fan, think, is this scripted? Is this actually happening? So, yeah,
it would be damning, wouldn't it? Because the logos do always seem to have a canny resemblance to the finalists in the end, but. I'd like not to go down that narrative, but we've seen weirder things in sport.
Yeah. Going back, I mentioned that season before when it was 2018. I would have loved the Case Keenum against Blake Bortles. But can you imagine that if it was Blake? We almost got a Blake Bortles and Case Keenum Super Bowl. That would have been so good. That would have been so good. Before we let you go, a couple of questions I want to ask you. First of all, which team do you think will have the number one overall pick next year?
Before the weekend, I would have said the Jets because I thought they were going 0-17. I'm going to go for the New Orleans Saints. And I've removed the S from that because I'm a Falcons fan and it's compulsory that we don't full name them. I just think they're really, really struggling. They're still cash strapped. They're in a really, really bad cap position. Spencer Rattler is, bless his soul, he's not a QB1. I don't know if you saw the video of him getting both intercepted and then wiped out into his own end zone for a touchdown. I just think you look at players like Kamara, who's sensational, might I add, but they've run him into the ground because they've had no other options. And I think that's really starting to show. So I think the Aints are going to take that number one pick next season.
Well, they were my pick in our season predictions, and I was kind of predicting you'd say that because of your loyalty to your team. And people will think, oh, maybe you'll go with the Jets for that reason. But I'm not going for the Jets. I'm going to go for the Tennessee Titans.
Nice. Yeah.
The one win they had was actually one of the luckiest wins I've ever seen in my life. That Cardinals loss was one of the worst losses I've seen in any sports game in a long time. That was such an awful loss.
Yeah.
I think they should be 0-8 in my opinion. And I think there's not, I can't think, apart from maybe Pollard and maybe a couple of players on defense, there's not a lot of great players on this Titan team. And I think they're destined for a second year in a row with the first overall pick. And then finally, let's put in a hypothetical situation, you're on the committee where you're picking your MVP.
Yes.
You've got your ballot sheet in front of you. You've got your pen in your hand. Which player are you writing down on that sheet?
I think, based on where I think the Super Bowl's going, I think Josh Allen is going to pick up the form as the season goes on and he's going to end up as MVP. He wouldn't be my MVP now, but how I envisage the season progressing, I think he'll be the man.
Interesting, and I kind of would like to agree with you, but I do think they're going to win the AFC, and I do think that not many quarterbacks or players in general win MVPs and make Super Bowls the way it's gone the last 10 years.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with Baker Mayfield. I think the way the ball's rolling, I can see him. He's obviously had a week off now. Week off now? No, it's not a week off, but they're looking good. Obviously, he didn't play, I don't think, amazing against the Saints, but I think there's been a storyline this season. I think that's the thing. A lot of times it's a storyline. And I do think that for me, it is one where the kind of story behind him, you know, being ousted and being, you know, benched and being barely played by the Panthers, and had a moment with the Rams, but how it ended with the Browns. And I think the kind of resurrection of Baker Mayfield in Tampa and the fact they're, 5-2 right now? For me, I think they're 5-2. Oh, they're 6-2, apologies.
They're a game that they are. Completely agree, even though my pick isn't the same, I completely agree with you around the narrative around him, because even as a divisional rival, it's hard not to appreciate something like that. He's just so good at everything he does. And again, like individually, he's not insane. Like, he's not a brilliant runner, and he's not dual threat, but he's just so, so consistent. And he makes that Bucks team look even better than they already are. And it's a nightmare for me as a Falcons fan that he's performing to that level, because we thought we'd have a shot at the playoffs, and realistically a wild card is all we're holding on to already, just 8 or 9 games into the season.
Well, try having Tom Brady in your division for 20 years and then come in and dominate the division for the last 6 years.
I was going to say, we had him as well, and they won a Super Bowl when he was playing for the Bucks. So
at the point, yeah, he did have him, yeah. Probably the best 3 years of their franchise's history. Yeah. There we are. That is the end of the show. First of all, Danny, huge thank you once again for coming on.
Absolutely. Anytime, mate. Preferably after a Falcons win next time, but whenever you need me.
Well, of course, there are people here who haven't yet come across your work. So for those who are watching on YouTube, you can see Danny's handle on Twitter. For those listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, where can they find you? But also, where can they find Atlanta Falcons UK on socials?
Absolutely. So as my gracious host just said, my name's Danny. I am First Down Danny _ on X and over on TikTok as well, where I post daily videos just rambling about the sport that we all love. But as well as that, I'm one quarter of ATL Falcons UK, and we do weekly Falcons content, which might add is actually for all viewers, because if you like seeing other fans in meltdown, then we are probably the place to be at the moment in time. So you can catch us, ATL Falcons UK, on X, Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, the works. But yeah, I'm First Down Danny _ everywhere else.
Well, you can say that you're the AFTV of fan channels for NFL. I've seen some of the clips and some of the episodes, and there are some great, great crash outs in these episodes. There's some good stuff there. But there we are. That is our week 8 review on the Across the Pod NFL podcast. I have been, as ever, your host today, Andy Davis, with our guest today in Atlanta Falcons UK, Danny Folks. And we'll see you guys next time.